Good morning, audience, and thank you for joining us for another bi-weekly episode of Fixing Healthcare from the Trenches. And this after about a six-week hiatus, where I must confess, like many healthcare disruptors, occasionally frustration sets in when you see that not only the public doesn't engage as much as they should, but our colleagues. But then in speaking to other people, I realized I must trudge on, and I'm going to bring on a guest here who's actually somebody who inspires me in many ways. So Dr. Elizabeth Haggard is a orthopedic hand surgeon, comes from a legacy. Her father was a very well-known hand surgeon, and she will tell you her story. She is perhaps our first international guest, or certainly our first surgeon guest. I'm going to let you, figure out where she's from, and she'll tell you her journey. So thank you for joining us, Dr. Haggard.
Alejandro, I'm so happy to be here. I'm super honored to be joining you today from Doha, Qatar in the Middle East. As you might see from my appearance, I am not from Doha, Qatar. I am originally from Stockholm, Sweden. And how does a Viking end up in the desert is probably what I'm going to need to get to after a little while. So I started my background in Sweden. I was in Stockholm where I did my hand and orthopedic surgery residencies, working, as you know, in Sweden in the public healthcare system, because right. I think anyone who is in healthcare knows that Scandinavia, and in particular Sweden, is huge with universal healthcare and socialized medicine and all of that stuff that you keep discussing in the US. I did my PhD at the Karolinska, I did my postdoc at Stanford, and I really have been very inspired by academia and pushing that forward. So for me, in 2009, I ended up leaving the public healthcare system in Stockholm to move into private practice. And that was actually for two reasons. The first reason was that I found that I could not engage in academia in public healthcare in Sweden. It was impossible. There was no way, even at an academic institution, that they would allow me time to engage in academia, because that would take away from the time to see patients and produce.
Ironic.
Super ironic. So I was like, okay, what am I going to do? I'm going to go into private practice, and then I'm going to make sure that I have one day a week where I can spend doing research, and I'm going to pay for that myself, because I'm driven by this, like examining stuff, critical thinking, writing. So that's what I ended up doing. I moved into private practice so I could support my academic pursuits.
So, you know, in the US, we have a new phrase called privademia. Have you heard that, Elizabeth?
Yes. Yes, I heard that. And I think privademia, I think, is like, to me, it's like optimal solution is to do privademia.
Yeah, because, you know, I remember I ran a course for 10 years, and even the university here, and now there's a second medical school in Miami. I mean, honestly, I hope they're listening. I'm an upfront person. I hope they're listening, but I know they're not. So that's why I'm not even worried that there is little engagement. There is actually, ironically, little academia. And my old group of, previous group, Miami Hand Center, we tried for 15, 20 years to engage with them, and no interest. So that's why I wanted to have an international, guest to say that these problems are really, really international. So
they are international. And it was the same thing for me with my academic pursuits. They were primarily through international networking and connections, both with the US and other parts of Europe. Like, I see you're wearing a beautiful Spanish shirt. That was a lot of my connection was with the amazing Marc Garcia Elias in Barcelona and the crew around him.
Now, wait, the reason I'm wearing this, so our guests know. So last time I think I saw you, and I hope to see you in Washington at the international meeting, right? But
for sure.
The last time I saw you was in Qatar, and what happened in Qatar, right? Everyone, the World Cup. So I saw Spain, my father's native country where my family still lives. And so I was looking for my USA shirt, but I couldn't find it. So,
so great. So you.
Yeah. So proud of my roots.
So then you, I went into I went into private practice, and the second reason was because in the socialized or public healthcare system in Sweden, I got so frustrated with the fact that I ended up seeing a lot of patients saying, like, I need to schedule you for surgery. And they say, well, when is my surgery going to be? And I'm going to say, yeah, that's going to be in about 2 years' time.
Now, Americans, and you know, very well-read Americans know about other healthcare systems, right? Whether you're in healthcare or not, and I think we all know the woes that our Canadian friends are having, and now the NHS. But I think most of us would think that Scandinavia, most of Scandinavia, particularly Sweden. Sweden's a big country. I mean, what's the population? Somewhere around 10 to 15 million, isn't it? Or
yeah, around 10 million. Yeah.
Oh my God! I mean, you have a country of 10 million people. Excellent resources. Excellent healthcare, and yet people are waiting. I mean, 2 years. I mean, if I make my patients wait more than a few weeks, my private patients, it's a problem in the U.S. So I'm glad you're bringing that perspective. And yeah, we do not want this.
And I was devastated. Like working with my patients, especially, you know, I would have like young carpenters, electricians come in, and they would need a wrist scope, and I'm like, I can do your wrist scope in maybe 12 to 15 months.
God,
they would be out of a job. Their business would be gone. Yeah. They could not do anything.
Yeah.
So that was my second reason for moving to private practice. And then after a little while in private practice, I decided, I had an opportunity to open my first clinic, and that was in 2012. And I built up a clinic in hand and orthopedic surgery, mostly hand and foot and ankle surgery, the extremities.
Interesting.
Quite interesting, because you can combine, you know, hand and feet. It's quite, you know, you can use the same instrument, so you save a little money from that stuff as well, right? As an entrepreneur, you have to think about these things.
A lot of the lay public, I'm sure you've heard that, a lot of lay public says hand surgery, okay, so you know you must do foot, and you know, they're kind of right. I mean, there is parallels in a sense, but the hand is an organ of function, which I know you're going to talk more about, right? A function, whereas the foot is a weight bearing, right? A locomotion organ, which are actually quite different, but I know only of a few hand surgeons who've done that. Jim Nunley, amongst others, right? Yeah. It's interesting mix. So, all right. So now you open this private clinic that does orthopedics, but basically hand and foot. And then what happened?
And then I kept on doing that for 6 years. And then I had an opportunity to sell that off and then move into a larger hospital, the Queen Sophia Hospital in Stockholm, Sweden, where I opened another clinic with some partners. And then finally, we ended up expanding that to two other cities in Sweden. So we ended up being in three different cities in Sweden with hand to shoulder and pretty much lower extremities. So, and the concept that we built it around was mostly private health insurance. And you're going to say, wait, hang on, you're from Sweden. Do you guys have private health insurance? Like, does it exist? But it does exist. And it's been growing like exponentially since it was introduced, like in 2005 or something like that. So about 20 years ago, we started having private health insurance.
Interesting.
And this is private health insurance that comes on top of this universal healthcare.
I see. But I've noticed that a lot of systems have it, probably to fulfill that need of people who need something faster. But the private insurance companies, as we all know, tend to make a lot of money. I mean, they're the ones with the shiny buildings. You go to their office, they have great art. They, you know, take wonderful lunches, unlike us.
Yes. Oh my God.
So it's interesting because, you know, I see them as sort of a necessary public service. But what are the challenges there with that?
So with the private health insurance companies, it was amazing in the beginning. Like when we started out, they did not have a huge amount of customers. And so they were just very happy to provide excellent service to sort of lure more people into, signing up for these health insurances. But as the insurance grew in popularity, the insurance companies started to get more restrictive. So then some of the companies started asking for pre-authorization. They Man, would take
it. I tell you, between McDonald's and pre-authorization, those are two American things I'm not proud of. Okay.
Oh, it was horrible.
Sorry, Mickey D's, but you know, you got to eat healthy. You got to eat well.
You got to eat healthy and well, but you know, and when it came to these insurance companies, like some of them would say, well, if you want to do a surgery, we're going to send it to someone who is an expert to give their opinion as to if you are allowed to do the procedure you do.
So for those listening, I mean, I don't know. Sending somebody to an expert when Dr. Haggard has already seen them is kind of like telling the person who sinned after they saw the Pope that they got to go see their neighborhood priest. In all honesty, it's absurd. Okay, so.
It blew my mind when I found out that one of the experts that they were sending my files to was an orthopedic spine surgeon.
Wow. Wow. Well, they'll pay that because I have people reaching out to me. I wonder if you do as well. I have people reaching out to me on LinkedIn wanting me to do these expert things. I'm like, I'm a surgeon. I treat people. I don't second guess my colleagues. And the thing is, that they're going to pay you quite well. So I'm thinking, why are they spending this money on that? Rather than just find the right doctors, that's important. And that goes into what we'll talk about later. But find the right doctors and pay them fairly. Right.
Exactly.
So then what happened? So you started getting frustrated in Sweden.
I started getting frustrated. And all of a sudden, also, you went from having like a smaller practice and really being in control of everything to having just a lot of staff. And you know what it's like to build something up from scratch and having more than one place. And, you know, it's a whole other ball game. And I was CEO and staff manager and doing academia and doing surgery and doing all this stuff. It just ended up being a lot of stuff that I really wasn't in my heart to do. And then I was approached by Aspatar. And so Aspatar is an orthopedic and sports medicine hospital in Doha, Qatar. And I would say it's probably one of the premier institutions in the world when it comes to treating elite athletes, regardless of sport. So it's just an amazing facility with sports orthopedics, sports medicine, sports cardiology, sports dentistry, and a huge research department as well.
For those colleagues listening, if you end up going to the Middle East, and certainly Doha's, Doha, Dubai, etc., are must-see stops, but definitely visit Aspatar. I had the privilege during the World Cup of getting a tour with Dr. Haggard and the then chairman of orthopedics. So it is a premier place, particularly for therapists, physiotherapists watching. I mean, what you're doing there in terms of therapy and the clinical studies, it's amazing. Yeah. You've been there
amazing.
How long? How long now?
Almost 3 years now. So two and a half to 3 years.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So you had gotten there recently before I went to Doha. Yeah. So wonderful. So so now that you've seen all of these different methodologies to deliver care, I mean, I want to hear what we do on this particular podcast is try to certainly bring some hope, but perhaps outline some strategies. So if you could give us your sort of top three strategies that would make healthcare more efficient and paradoxically save a lot of money. So if we could just get the bureaucrats to listen to us, right? So
yes.
What would those be, Elizabeth?
So I would say, just keep in mind, I worked in the socialized public healthcare in Sweden. I worked in private insurance-based healthcare in Sweden. And now I'm working in a combined private public system in the Middle East. And I would say my number one thing when it comes to healthcare is you have to cut out the middleman. Isn't that what you say in the U.S.? The middleman.
Yes.
Get rid of the middleman. And in this case, middleman is the giant. It's the insurance company. So cut out the middleman. That's what I would say is my number one.
Yeah. The problem is the middlemen are making a lot of money and they are entrenched. And the reality is, right, we need administrators. We need you know, some bureaucracy, right? I mean, just, but yeah, certainly we need to figure out a way to greatly minimize that. So, okay. Well, that's in line with what most of our guests say. Okay, number two.
Yeah. My number two is you have to realize that healthcare does not need to be in huge institutions and hospitals. The absolute majority, especially of orthopedic surgery, and especially in our field of hand surgery, can be done in smaller clinics outside of the hospital in a super efficient manner, giving excellent point of care to the patients, excellent service and follow-ups with minimal risks, because you're not even bringing the patients or the clients into the hospital where they have all of these bacteria and all of these infections and all of that stuff going on. So that is my second thing.
Excellent. I wrote an article that came out, I think, in Markets Insider in a business magazine. It talked about the concept of specialty centers, right? Because you're having everything in one place, all the imaging studies, the different experts talking, therapy, obviously, you know, surgery in one place. So we are enamored, at least in the U.S., we are enamored with hospitals to the point where I ask somebody, where did you have this wrist surgery done? And they'll say to me, you know, I don't know, HSS or Cleveland Clinic. And I go, that's a great institution. I mean, if I want to have a liver transplant, I'm definitely, or, you know, but my God, you don't need to go. And they often don't know the name of the physician. They don't remember that.
Exactly.
Have you seen that?
Exactly. Yeah. All the time.
I mean, the institution doesn't do your surgery. I mean, we need them for many things, but that's a great point. I'm not sure I've seen, I've had a guest say that. So wonderful. So number three.
Number three is what we did in our private clinic in Stockholm was that we wanted it to be a one-stop shop. So what we really wanted it to be was we built up, we had within the same unit, we had a ultrasound in every single clinic room. We had a fluoroscopy and we had a cone beam CT for distal extremity computer tomographies. Right. So if you as a patient came to me through your private insurance or paying privately, I would have a 30-minute slot. I would examine you. I would do ultrasound. I would do fluoroscopy and I would do a CBCT all within that 30-minute slot. So within 30 minutes, you are completely examined. You are completely done. You have your diagnosis. You don't need to run off to x-rays or MRIs or anything like that. You're all done. The diagnosis is set. And then we can set the treatment. And the treatment is set within 1 to 2 weeks after your visit. And then what happened with the insurance companies were they started questioning my interpretation of a fluoroscopy or my interpretation of an ultrasound. And they said, well, we need the radiology report on this. And I said, I don't have a radiology report. And they said, well, we're going to have to send the patient to radiology for an ultrasound. And I'm like, I've been doing ultrasound for 15 years. I'm trained in ultrasound. I am not a radiologist, but I do it every single day. And I'm a hand surgeon. I know the anatomy inside and out. And my research is on wrist and proprioception, all this stuff. But so they for said, the public, no, we got to send it out.
The public to understand it. So let's define for one, a fluoroscopy for the layperson listening. Unfortunately, the minimal amount of lay people, because at least the U.S. public has not taken an interest in this. It has to get worse before they will, but I know they will. So we are going to be memorialized here, Elizabeth. So a fluoroscopy, and I have one also in my office. I've had it. Actually, we had the first one that came out back at 28 years ago, Zyscan. Fluoroscopy is a live x-ray, folks. So what she's saying is you don't need to go. And if you need a spine x-ray or something, yes, you need to get a full series big machine. But for what we do, including foot and ankle, fluoroscopy is a live x-ray and it allows motion. So it's very different. And the fact that the insurance company is telling the expert that you need to get this, is there an example of adding cost to the system? We know how to save costs, right? Just listen to us, get us in a room, you know, just make sure you have coffee and lock us in a room and we'll figure this out. But we're going to do it. I was texting today with a, with Dr. Greg Murphy, who's a congressman. He was a guest on this. He is the only practicing surgeon in the U.S. Congress. He's a urologist. And he is head of the Physician Caucus now. So, you know, I don't know what's going to happen come November. I know the world is kind of chuckling at all this, but something's going to happen. And hopefully we'll have a chance to fix it. So wow. It's amazing because as I often see, all three of your solutions are things that, I mean, not only make sense, but I and others have been touting for a long time, Elizabeth. So I'm going to give you a rapid fire mind. You're going to see how they align. We need oversight, not authorization, right? There's a difference.
Yes.
Right. So if Dr. Haggart, now I'm not going to use you as an example. That's not fair. If Dr. Badia is scoping, is doing an arthroscopy, and everybody walks in with wrist pain, right?
Yeah.
Then the insurance company should be like, let's take a look at those charts. And I think physicians welcome that. Okay, good physicians, right? So we need oversight, not authorization. We don't need hurdles every step of the way. And that, right?
Yes.
The other thing is aligned with what you said, but you actually need to see the right clinician at the right time. So right clinician means you got to see that, you know, like you said, you're the spine surgeon, just like, I don't know, I mean, spine has changed so much in the last 20 years. It doesn't make any sense. If you have a wrist problem, you want to see a wrist specialist, and at the right time, which is a problem with Sweden and other systems, is when they, delay, that costs money, right?
Definitely.
That ultimately costs money because things get more complicated. And the last thing is public education. That is critical, and that's why I know that Dr. Haggart agreed to be on this, because the end user is our patients. And they in society, the ones who are suffering, if we don't get more, you know, engagement with things like this, well, we actually have some solutions under our noses.
Yeah.
So I do have an announcement, Elizabeth, on, I think you know about this, but in my book, just came out on audiobook. So for those,
awesome.
For those who are too busy to read, they're on a treadmill, they're on a commute to work, and they want to listen to, you know, a chapter or half a chapter a day, you'll knock the book out in a week. But it's
that
on
awesome.
It's on Google Books, and it's a big $6. And if, just like a healthcare system, if financially you are strapped, send me an email and I will pay for your ebook. Because all I care about is getting change. So Dr. Haggart, any last words? This was amazing. Thank you. What, any last words?
No, thank you for having me on the show. I love the work you're doing, Alejandro. I think you're just amazing. And keep pushing that envelope, because we need people like you who are out there campaigning and talking about this stuff. So thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. No, yes, Elizabeth is right. We those of us who are doing this, need to spread the word. So if you think this, some of the things that Dr. Haggart says are very eye-opening to you, please just share it. It's just as easy to click share as it is to click like. All right. So keep that in mind, because we need to get this word out. So thank you, Dr. Haggart. I'm going to sign off. And for our listeners, you'll see you in about 2 weeks in our podcast, Fixing Healthcare from the Trenches. Bye-bye.